smoking and other tobacco use. I'm always amazed when I see a smoker because I think, could it be that there is still someone who does not understand the dangers of smoking? And is it possible that the person could not look on his own human body as being something so precious as to warrant our very careful valuation of the body and cherishing it with every possible way that we would have to do so? If we owned the Hope Diamond, we would probably build a large cathedral around it and set up guards day and night and put a lot of effort and expense to protect that Hope Diamond. And yet the Hope Diamond cannot buy one lung or even one blood vessel in one lung. How important then, when we see the importance of our lungs, that we recognize that importance and that we carefully guard the life so that we can cherish and get the very best possible use and production out of the body. Now, without fear of contradiction, I would like to say that the use of tobacco in this country underlies more ill health than any other single bad habit. Every disease that we know is made worse by tobacco smoking or by the use of tobacco in any way. Some say, let's get some substitutes for cigarette smoking. Well, substitutes have been made, and these substitutes are hardly better than the original. And so we feel that the best thing to do is to try to learn how not to smoke, to make stopping smoking an easy and important change in one's life has been the objective of a good bit of the instruction that I have done in the last 20 years. We have discovered that smokers have certain features of their behavior. One is that they are in active participation in one's own personal victimization, and generally are not aware that they are victimizing themselves. They also are a participant in the victimization of those around them. Again, they generally are unaware that they are victimizing others around them. The second characteristic of their behavior is a certain negativism. I know it's harmful to me, but what's the use? A third thing is that there are short-term gains that are expected to be realized, such as a certain personality expression or a certain sophistication or suaveness that the person thinks that they gain by smoking. And this kind of short-term gain that the individual has, he thinks to be worthwhile. Then a fourth behavior pattern that smokers have is that of long-term punishment. They understand that smokers get a greater risk of lung cancer, and that all smokers have emphysema if they smoke long enough. And yet, with these threats to their health and their well-being and their financial security, they still engage in this kind of long-term punishment. Smoking comes under the heading of what Dr. Blackley, an Oregon psychiatrist, calls seductive behavior. Smoking does more harm to the face than working out of doors does to the sun. And yet the individual will continue to do so, will continue to smoke even though he understands that all tissues of the body are injured by the smoking habit. So let us study just a little bit this habit of self-destruction. In recognition of the declaration that smoking underlies more ill health than any other single thing, we would like to feature this problem of smoking. Respiratory disease is one of the fastest growing disabilities in America today. Nothing short of an all-out effort on pollution, lifestyle, and high-pressure advertising will be effective. The more knowledge one has, the better able one is to make an intelligent decision about smoking. A few days ago, I was surprised to see my waiting room filled with an acrid blue haze. Since most of my patients respect my suggestions about not smoking in the waiting room, I was curious to see who was generating such an unpleasant fog. There sat five or six tousled young men puffing away. They had come to get gamma globulin shots because one of their group had come down with hepatitis. What, I thought, could make intelligent young men destroy themselves systematically? A desire to appear sophisticated, attempts to prove virility? Could it be immaturity? Could it be social pressures or just plain rebellion? It has been determined that there is not a single benefit that smoking gives to the body or mind. No increase in alertness, no reduction of painful stimuli. Even the calming effect that many claim to receive cannot be substantiated by laboratory tests. It stands that the reasons for beginning smoking are all external to the person, external to the body. Yielding to this type of reasoning surely represents a weakening of the integrity of the personality and character structure, since almost everybody has enough knowledge to know that smoking is a self-destructive act. While society is concerned, and rightly so, with the drama of the drug problem, the smoking problem dwarfs it by comparison. The Surgeon General's report on smoking and health, which started out as a modest booklet a few years ago, now is a huge tome listing only the more important articles that show the effects of smoking on the human body. There is literally no organ system that escapes its baleful effect. And the sad part is that while older people seem to be decreasing their consumption of tobacco, sales are increasing again due to the hordes of young people who are beginning to smoke. Doubtless they feel that they will not be harmed if they smoke only a few years, and yet recent studies show that definite deterioration takes place in lung function tests in only a few years, a few months in some. These studies were done on high school and college age youngsters. The younger the person is when he starts smoking, the more likely it is to cause serious damage in a very short while, and the more likely he is to develop a life-threatening problem such as cancer in his later adult life. Dr. Alton Oxner, who practiced in Louisiana for many years and is a medical giant, has made a startling statement that every smoker will eventually get cancer of the lung if he lives long enough. We know now that every smoker has some degree of emphysema if he has smoked more than just a few months. When the chronic bronchitis or the chronic cough begins, the emphysema has already started. The scope of the problem was illustrated by Sir George Godwin in an article in 1970. At that time, he estimated 50,000 deaths annually in Great Britain attributed to smoking. More significantly, at least 350,000 man-years are lost annually to Britain due to deaths before retirement age and sicknesses associated with smoking. Many years ago, England was losing 100,000 man-years and 25,000 deaths annually due to tuberculosis. Through a back-breaking effort, these figures have been reduced by 9/10. So the cigarette, says Sir George, has far more than undone one of the greatest medical triumphs in this century. Death does not come easily and gracefully to the smoker, but slowly and cruelly, with years of lost productivity beforehand, years of being cared for by one's friends or relatives. Gone is the elegant allurement of a forbidden act. The doctor sees the seamy side of smoking with its pus and mucus and blood, and finally its death. Little wonder that more doctors have quit smoking than any other group, and very few young doctors are taking up the habit. If a young person could make rounds with a doctor visiting his patients who are disabled because of smoking, it is doubtful that many would consider it a sophisticated act. Now, there are general principles in breaking the tobacco habit, and I would like to go into some of those right now. One of the characteristic attributes of man is the ability to learn, to modify behavior as a result of experience, and to change even his character structure through those things that have been provided for us by a loving Savior. In breaking a bad habit, there are seven items that I feel must be clearly understood. The first is to understand the reason why the habit is injurious. Now, that can require a good little bit of study. Study the subject well so that no lingering doubt remains. Number two, avoid persons and places and foods and events that lead to the temptation. Now, diet can be one of the major factors in the total control of the life, and therefore I'd like to start on this second thing in discussing diet. We know that there are several things that encourage one to smoke, to have the smoking habit, or encourage one to have a habit with drugs or a habit with alcohol. Animals have been taught how to smoke when they have been given a bad diet. This diet is very similar to the American teenager's diet. It has such things as hot dogs, French fries, condiments, vinegar, spices, and of course Cokes, and a lot of sugar. This kind of diet will set up a series of events in the life of an animal that will make this animal have a metabolic craving for tobacco smoke. Consequently, if the researchers will make a little muzzle, the animal will go to the muzzle and put his snoot in the little muzzle where smoke is being fed into the muzzle and will breathe that smoke, apparently enjoying it a great deal. Now, if the same animal is placed on a good vegetarian diet, that animal will stop having a craving for tobacco. The very same studies have been done with drugs and have been done with alcohol. With alcohol consumption, one study showed that on the all-American teenager's diet, rats would take 52.7% of their fluids in the form of a 10% alcohol solution, although water was readily available. If the animals were given, instead of the all-American teenager's diet, if instead of that he were given a vegetarian diet, his consumption of the 10% alcohol solution was only 2.7%. Quite a distinct difference. We can believe that cigarette smoking can be very easily controlled, or much more easily controlled, if the person takes a proper diet. In my opinion, the best diet to control one's cravings is that of a vegetarian diet. This tends to reduce the thirst that we have for alcoholic beverages and reduce the craving that one has for tobacco. Now, the third item is that of banishing indulged thoughts of tobacco. Now, tobacco may have made a contribution to your personality expression. You may have thoughts of yourself as a very sophisticated or very poised individual when you have that cigarette in your hand. You should banish such thoughts. Make certain that you think of yourself as being poised and educated and a friend and kindly without leaning on this crutch of having tobacco. Stop thinking of your personality expression in terms of this kind of indulgence. Then the fourth thing is that of cultivating the imagination in only those images that lead away from temptation. Now, that means that you should not think of yourself as even owning tobacco. Don't think of yourself as purchasing tobacco or as having matches and tobacco in your possession. Make certain that your imagination becomes free from these things. And, of course, make certain that your imagination does not picture any kind of enjoyment from the tobacco smoke itself. Many people picture themselves as enjoying a good smoke after lunch. Don't think in those terms. Instead of that, think of yourself as enjoying a good walk after lunch. In your imagination, picture yourself as being without tobacco. The fifth thing is to keep busy. Idleness is the strength of bad habits. School opportunities may open up to you. Take them. A new job or hobby may help to distract the thoughts and to occupy the hands. And don't forget that a new lifestyle, such as the vegetarian lifestyle, affords a wealth of study opportunities. There are books and tapes and health magazines and a lot of other materials, printed materials, and conventions and seminars that can help you to embark on a healthful adventure. In fact, I am quite certain that you will think of the vegetarian lifestyle as a grand adventure. I challenge you to take it up. It will help you to control your cravings, to control your weight. We know that the set point for weight is reduced when an individual has a vegetarian type of lifestyle. Hobbies can be taken up. The study of hobbies that can assist you in the breaking of a bad habit can be anything from a healthful lifestyle to that of some kind of handcraft. Now, the sixth item in breaking a habit is do not give up the struggle, even though the resolution to break the habit may be broken once or twice or a thousand times. That one has been overcome in a temptation simply shows how much one needs to struggle. One should think the matter over and understand at what point one was caused to fail. One should guard that point as one guards a broken arm in all future time. I recall when I was an intern, a man came into our waiting room when I was on emergency room duty with a broken arm. And I recall opening the little swinging cafe doors that separated the waiting room from our reception room. And as I pushed the door open, I remember how this man jumped back and guarded himself. He held out his good arm as if to shield himself from the swinging door. I remember how he was so careful to take care of that broken arm. How carefully, if you are a smoker, you should take care of your habit patterns to make certain you guard yourself in that point, just as one would guard a broken arm. Now, the broken arm gives one present pain, but the cigarette habit may promise you present enjoyment, but you are making an appointment with future misery if you continue with the smoking habit. I can recall when I was a smoker, the thing that convinced me that I should not smoke was when I coughed up my first little bronchial plug. I remember that morning very well when I looked at that little mucus plug that I knew had come from a bronchus that had sufficient bronchospasm in it that I was not getting air into it for a long enough period of time for a bit of the mucus to become dried. How frightened I was. I knew that I was on the road to emphysema. Most smokers do not have enough knowledge about the physiology and pathophysiology of smoking to understand what happens when one coughs up a bronchial plug. But it is a most important warning sign. Number seven in breaking habits is do not think it an easy thing that you have undertaken. It will not be broken in a day, that which has taken years to establish. And so let's take a few steps in the breaking of the tobacco habit. I recommend that a specific course be taken to break the smoking habit. On the first day, I recommend that a diet be taken that includes only water and clear herb teas, such as catnip tea, hops tea, mint tea, and so forth. Now, one may think, oh, I could never go a whole day without eating. You can if you're stopping smoking. You will find it easier to do both of these things at the same time. Stop smoking and don't eat food during that whole day. Now, just to encourage you, let me say that I have never known a person who was faithful in fasting the first day of his stopping smoking who failed to stop smoking during a five-day period. Now, on the second day, the smoker should take only fruits and fruit juices, and that only at his regularly scheduled meal times. Let us say you're accustomed to eating at 7 in the morning, 12:30 in the afternoon, and 6 at night. Take only fruit juices. Now, beginning the third day, the smoker can add bread to the breakfast meal, and vegetables and bread to the dinner meal. Supper, if it is taken at all, should be only whole grains and fruit, such as one apple and a slice of whole wheat toast. Do make it whole wheat, by the way, because whole grains have a lot of B vitamins in them, and these B vitamins assist us to have a control over the various appetites. Also, B vitamins assist us to have an even disposition. You may know that some people who stop smoking just really turn into witches and wizards, and you wish they would go back to smoking. They have become so unpleasant. So we recommend the whole grain breads with their large complement of B vitamins to help them in this matter of having a very even disposition. For the rest of the week, the smoker should eat freely of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, and he can eat sparingly of nuts. But he should avoid the following list of things that people are often in the habit of taking. Caffeine, now that would be colas, tea, coffee, headache medicines, chocolate, and a number of soft drinks, even some brands of caffeinated orange juice are on the market today. The person who is stopping smoking should also avoid all spices. Now that would include mustard, vinegar, pepper, pickles, sharp cheeses, cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, and so forth. Be very careful of black pepper. Black pepper tends probably as much as any other single thing to encourage one's craving for tobacco. One should avoid meats of all kinds, and that would include fish and chicken. One should avoid all fats, all oils, all fried foods, and mayonnaise, and salad dressing, butter, margarine, and so forth. Fats of any kind should be avoided. One of the reasons for that is that fats tend to cut down on the oxygen concentration in the brain, and the smoker is already fighting some sort of constriction of blood vessels in the brain and other rebound phenomena in the brain as a result of the smoking habit. So it is far better if he leaves off fats for a few days. Sweets and all rich foods, heavy meals and overeating, all of this should be avoided by the individual who is really determined to stop smoking. More than three foods at a meal should also be involved, since if one takes a wide variety of foods at one meal, this tends to increase our cravings. All of alcohol should be avoided. That would include wines and liqueurs, and as well as hard liquor. Now, the second item, the first item that I have mentioned is that of the diet and just how to control that during the first week. The second item is that of plenty of fresh air and deep breathing. A deep breathing exercise will be found to be very beneficial and should be taken as follows. Inhale deeply and hold a breath for the slow count of 20. Exhale deeply and hold out for a slow count of 10. Repeat 40 to 50 times. Now this you will find to be work. But do it anyway. It is indeed an exercise. Take a long walk at least twice in the day, lasting no less than 15 minutes on a stretch. Now, if you're the kind of person who cannot walk more than 15 minutes without a good bit of distress, then make your 15-minute walk interspersed with some rests, perhaps on a bench or beside the road. Maybe you can stop and watch a flower or a dog or a child playing. But if you are quite a vigorous individual, you may want to take quite a vigorous walk. Walk as briskly as you are capable of doing, and for no less than 15 minutes on a stretch. Now, if you can walk a whole hour, so much the better. You will find it very relaxing, very helpful in breaking the tobacco habit. Air out your house and your car, sun your clothing and your blankets, and make everything about the air around you fresh and sweet smelling. Try to get rid of the tobacco odor from everything that you possess. Now, the third thing has to do with exercise. Not only is exercise beneficial because it promotes breathing fresh air, but exercise assists in the elimination of toxins Now, the person who has been smoking for quite some time will find that he has a lot of accumulated toxins, and exercise can greatly help with that. A 20-minute walk at least twice a day, and preferably twice or three times daily during the first week, will be found very beneficial. Use care, however, that you do not exercise to the point that the muscles become sore and tender and your joints become stiff. It is better to gauge the amount of exercise that one does so that he stops just short of tender muscles. Now, the fourth item in breaking a habit, in the steps to do so, are sleep and rest. Because sleep fortifies the will and rest restores the necessary nutrients to the nerves and to the various body tissues, it is necessary to have a proper amount of sleep and rest before one embarks on this program of changing one's habit. If one has difficulty sleeping without tobacco, a warm, prolonged bath just before retiring, blotting the skin rather than rubbing the skin dry, will soothe and comfort the nerves. Now, some good counsel. Do not overwork. Do not use medications or vitamin supplements of any kind. If you do use medications or vitamin supplements, you may find that the irritation to the stomach and maybe to the nerves also will increase the likelihood that you will have a craving. Vitamin supplements also often increase one's cravings, not only for tobacco but also for food and for a number of other things. A very important thing is to enlist the help of a buddy in your quest to have better health and to quit smoking and to control everything about your life. Call your buddy in the early morning and in the early afternoon and at any time that you happen to have a craving. Select a buddy who knows and trusts in God and pray with your buddy. Get your buddy to pray for you that you will have the grace, the strength, the endurance, the help of heavenly agencies in this all-out effort to stop this health-destroying habit. If your buddy is also a smoker trying to quit, so much the better. You can support one another. Rid your house, your car, your office, and all other premises of cigarettes. Allow no smoking around you. Tell all your friends that you're stopping smoking, and you would appreciate it if they didn't smoke in your presence, nor where you could even smell their smoke. Encourage other members in the family to quit. And, of course, you should avoid stressful situations. Since alcohol always destroys the willpower, it is strictly forbidden during the withdrawal period. Since caffeine stimulates the nervous system and often makes the nerves jangle, it is also prohibited during the withdrawal period. Sugar uses up B vitamins and can cause the nervous system to be irritable. Therefore, it is also forbidden during the withdrawal period. Even afterward, you should not use much, since a small amount of sugar even can reduce our ability to fight germs. We certainly don't want to do anything that would cause the body to be unable to fight its battles. I hope that these suggestions have been helpful to you. I have perhaps one more suggestion, and that is lots of water. Water inside the body as well as outside of the body. You will find that 2 showers a day can be helpful, and the drinking of a large number of glasses of water every day, perhaps 8 or 10 or 12 glasses. Since 90% of certain parts of the brain are made up of water, it can be very helpful to you to make certain that your brain is functioning quite nicely. Success to you in your efforts to break this health-destroying habit.
This has been an ACM production. Copyright 1985. All rights reserved. This cassette is protected by copyright and thus protected by federal law against all copying and duplication. It is unlawful to copy this cassette. For additional copies of this series, or other cassettes or books by Dr. Thrash, or for information regarding Yuchi Pines Institute and its various programs, please write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box 922, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17108. If in a hurry, dial our nationwide toll-free watch line, 1 800-233-4450. In Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Alaska, or other countries, please call 1-717-652-7000. Waiting to serve you. This is ACM. We're a nonprofit corporation helping prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ.